Tom Gimbel, job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. After a major news story breaks like one did on Saturday, should a company communicate to its employees or should a company say something to the world? There's a story I'm sure you know about today, Tom. The Sioux Falls School District, that's in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, had to fire an employee who wrote something on Facebook they wish that person hadn't. What do you say? Is that the elephant in the room, or do you just keep your head down and do the work?
Well, I think from the employee standpoint that you should really be cognizant of who has access to your social media. I think more and more we're seeing employees that they have it locked, so unless you're connected to people. However, if you're connected to people on social media, they're going to see it anyways in screenshots. And you know, as I tell my children and people that I've worked with for decades, I've always said that you got to assume that anything you put online is going to be able to be seen by the world. And so that, from the employee perspective, you know, be careful. You got to realize that there's consequences to your actions, which over the past few years, I think a lot of people have forgotten. From a leadership standpoint, I think it's always best to over-communicate from a company perspective. And I think a message that goes out and says, you know, obviously something terrible happened over the weekend. And as we all know, politics can be a divisive force, especially recently in our country. And we think it's best that unless it's agreed upon by all parties, that we keep political discussion to a minimum.
Even if it's a unifying message.
Yeah, I think if you say something to that, listen, because what ends up happening in today's day and age is you have 100 people and 98 people may be with you and say that was nice and we're all on the same page. And two people are going to say, you're a Trumper, he shouldn't, who cares? And, you know, and that's terrible. Like, somebody was trying to assassinate somebody. Like, that's not a good thing. And so you've got to be very careful and just say, hey, let's acknowledge this happened. Emotions flare up during times like this. And we want to acknowledge that people may be feeling a little bit raw at the moment on either side. And let's try and really keep it to a minimum. At least acknowledge that it's out there, because then no employee can say, well, I didn't know that we weren't supposed to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? And you get that defiant attitude, which is really where the problem comes in.
If I was the superintendent of a school district or the CEO of a company, or if it was my business, I would not give anybody access to our social media posts. And I know at some point I'm going to have to delegate, but then I would say anything you post, I see before you hit send, because I would be just nervous about that. Even if it, you know, forget Saturday, just anything, you know, I would want to make sure if it's coming out under the auspices of my organization that it goes through my eyeballs first.
Well, and I think that's really the delineation there, John, is what's representing the company, what's representing individuality. And I think there's probably a fine line. If, you know, if somebody went out on LinkedIn, which is really a business site, and if somebody has listed that I am the manager of XYZ at a company, that they're representing that company even in addition to representing themselves. And I would agree with you on that front. And I think that at this point in time, that it really is poster beware, so to speak, John, that if you go out there and you say something, you have to be ready to handle the consequences. This is big boy and big girl time.
I got other questions for you about other things, about Gen Zers and how they are handling the work world, but that's going to have to wait for next week. We will pick it up here then, okay?
Always good to talk to you, John, in tough times. Let's all everybody stay strong and stay positive.
Philip Weiss is here, and he is conjuring up the Olympics and the 4x100 Olympic relay. Why is that something you want to talk about today, Philip?
Hi, John. Well, it's interesting. You'd wonder, what does the Olympics have to do with the operating of a business? But everyone's really focused, among other topics these days, on the Paris Olympics, including business leaders. And in some recent discussions, we've been surprised at how often executives and managers have been invoking not simply individual events and competitive sports at the Olympics, but the entire process of preparing on the part of the athletes as good guideposts and lessons for their own business managers. And you mentioned the 4x100 relay. The key example we hear thrown around in business these days is that critical baton pass in the relay race at the Olympics, which has either won or cost the race for countries in the past, depending on how well it's executed. And business leaders are telling us it's a great analogy when they talk to their teams about sharing information with one another, about sharing information between different groups, for example, as part of a sales process. That exchange of info has got to be as seamless, as accurate, as well-planned as a baton toss, or the costs will be felt by everyone.
It's not just forwarding an email or a Google Doc and saying, look at this, then you look at this, then you look at this. What are you talking about?
I mean, that's a really good, because clearly in some cases, if the information is simple and clear enough, that's all that it takes. But there are many situations in the business world, for example, when you're bidding on a complex contract, and a number of our clients in the past have had all kinds of teams who have to work together. They might be, for example, estimators, salespeople who spoke to a potential client, the folks that put the contracts together or drafted the proposal. These different groups operate sometimes in silos until they get the information that they need for their part of the transaction. And if a salesperson doesn't share every concern raised by a client or a potential client, or the estimator of the cost of a deal, John, doesn't include changing prices that they anticipate, and they don't share that at the right time in the right way with great accuracy, and there's all your analogies to the 4x100 baton moment, the proposal will not survive or prevail. So that's just one of many examples of complete, well-planned, well-timed transfer of information. That's the business baton moment.
Mm. I wonder what the hallmarks of that are, because I think all of us have got emails too that are way too long or way too detailed. Some people think they're communicating fully when they could communicate more concisely. So are there any rules or guides along those lines, Philip?
Yeah, well, you know, in a way, what you just asked goes back to the analogy. You know, when you talk, we worked with some Olympic-related teams in the past. They say it is so important that these runners stay in their lane. Don't overshoot or undershoot. Make sure they're watching for the movement, the body language, the signals from either the giver or the receiver of the baton. That's true in terms of what you just described. We want to pay attention to how people have accepted and integrated information from us in the past, so we're not sending them war and peace when a three-line, clear articulation is going to do the job.
Yeah, I think many of us have come out of a meeting and we said that could have been an email, or we got an email and we said that could have been a text. Walk me through a real-world example of some of this.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because in one case, we had a situation where a client of ours was bidding on a big governmental contract, and they felt that the speed would win the deal for them. And in fact, they missed the fact that there was going to be likely follow-on projects coming, and they lost it right there. And that information was available. It wouldn't have been complicated to share, but they just missed it at the moment of the baton pass in an effort to make the exchange. And you know, you think about the 2016 Rio Olympics, the U.S. 4x100 team had the best runners in the world, but they really lost the medal. They were, in fact, disqualified simply on the bungled baton pass. It was a timing issue. No one dropped it. It was just about doing it carefully. So we see analogies in the sports world and the business world as well.
Japan took the silver, even though they didn't have any marquee runners, but they were more efficient, weren't they?
That's it. I mean, they from what we understand, reading up on the history of this as part of our trainings, they kept practicing that baton handoff over and over. So many teams relied on the simple speed. And that's kind of like, in business, sometimes it's the rainmaker, it's the salesperson, it's the promise, as opposed to the execution of the fine points. So you're exactly right. Japan had no one runner that was a world record time sort of winner, but rather they just focused on the process. And, you know, similarly, when you look at athletes preparing for the Olympics, John, they are entirely committed to what we call incremental goal setting. So again, your example of don't overshoot, don't go too far, make the appropriate adjustments to go from a 5-minute mile that you're running to a 4-minute mile in short pieces. In the business world, we're hearing executives say, we need to take a lesson from that too. Let's make sure our managers go for what we would call less failure, small improvements when it comes to employees' work, because that will get everyone to a better, more productive place.
When you have a multi-pronged, say, inter-office or inter-company communication, we're bidding on a project or we're going to change out some capital items in the warehouse or whatever, do you imagine that it's a sort of central manager of the project and everything kind of like a spoke and hub goes through that person? Or is it sort of like a one long chain where each person communicates effectively to the next and the next and the next?
Yeah. What's really fascinating is we've seen two ways to make it work. One is what you just described, John. That is to have a responsible overseer of the process who has enough knowledge both of the team's work and of past mistakes made that they can ask the relevant questions as the information flows through from piece to piece. The other way that seems to work very well is a really good, clear, but simple checklist. So when people transfer information, they have to acknowledge that they've asked the right questions and only provided the information that matters, but included all of it. So whether it's a good checklist that you continue to audit or a great overseer, both can work equally well.
You're going to be watching the Olympics, Philip?
I will, including that relay, in case you and I have another story for next year we can springboard off of.
It really is. I think the analogy is surprisingly apt. Stay in your lane, don't overshoot, don't undershoot, manage your expectations, be seamless in the handoff. That's the key to running a relay race. I used to do it when I was a kid, and I very much enjoy watching it. And the events like the 4x400 or 4x100 are really won or lost in the exchange zones. That's where guys are slowing down and speeding up. That's the key.
Right. I mean, it's, even the term you just used, the terms you used, slowing down and speeding up, it goes back to your question about communicating with someone that may have a slightly different style than you do, who receives information in ways that you might not. That's a great analogy there as well, because if you know what information has worked for someone, what questions are likely to raise based on past transactions, and you can front load that, be proactive, you're going to keep the process moving in a truly dynamic way, but not miss that key information.
Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarthAtWork.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip, as always.
It's a pleasure, John. Thank you.
You hear us talk about Camp Aramoni. Boy, here's an interesting business to examine on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And joining us is the owner of that camp, Jennifer Bias, who I met out that way kind of accidentally once upon a time. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How's things at Camp Aramoni?
Oh, they're absolutely wonderful. Just wonderful. We got through the storm last night, and all the tents are still standing, and the guests are safe, and all is right with the world.
So what is Camp Aramoni? It's an example of boutique camping or glamping. How do you describe that?
We describe it boutique camping, and what it is all of the things that people love about traditional camping. For example, being in nature, family time, closeness, you know, getting away from the hustle and bustle. But then it does have all the amenities that you would find at home. So you have a king-size bed, you have a working restroom, you have air conditioning. It just is a very, very comfortable way to spend time in nature.
It's not too far from Starved Rock State Park, if you're wondering geographically, about 90 minutes, say, from downtown Chicago. What got you interested in this? Are you a camper by nature?
I used to love to camp when I was younger, and I think it was back in 2016 I came across an article in a magazine that they talked about glamping, and I'm like, well, this is interesting. And so I just kind of started Googling it, and it wasn't really an industry in the United States at the time, but there was a presence in Europe. So I started thinking that, boy, this would be something that I would really like to do once I retire from my career. So I just started talking about it, thinking about it, and then got serious after I had the opportunity to go glamping and came home with all the passion and excitement that it was really going to, I was going to make it happen.
So then you needed to find a place for that to happen. How did you stumble upon this old, it's actually an old brick yard, right? Or brick manufacturing place?
Right. It was the Aristocrat Clay Products Company, a 19th century brickyard that operated from 1870 to 1981. And I've been born and raised in this area, and I didn't even know that this brickyard was there. So it had been abandoned for more than 30 years when we stumbled across it. And it was quite the shambles, but it was 100 acres on the beautiful Vermilion River, some of it which was... we had major cleanup to do, but down on the river where we put the campground, it was just beautiful, and it just screamed, this is the place that we're going to do this.
What an investment of time and money and hope. I mean, you had to hope that you could make it luxurious, but also preserve the nature in it, and then hope that people will come. That was kind of a gamble, wasn't it?
It was a big gamble, and my family, my husband and my son and daughter, they all kept telling me I was crazy, and I'm like, you know, jump on my crazy train because I really have a good feeling about this. And so what we did was our business plan was to, you know, preserve the past and to preserve nature. So we took everything that property was, from the brickyard to, you know, when the Native Americans inhabited it hundreds of years ago. And we just kept all that history and just made it the most beautiful place. We put in over 15 acres of Illinois prairie grass and wildflowers. We put in a pond and we've stocked it. So it really is a serene, beautiful place that takes you back to nature and makes you forget about everything in the world that drives you crazy.
So this was your vision and dream, but was it hard to persuade your husband to go all in? And was this almost called Camp Alimony instead of Camp Arimony?
Well, that's the inside joke. So, yeah, it took some convincing, but he put his trust in me. And so as we, through the 7-year journey, we called it Camp Arimony because that's what the river was called by the Native Americans, and it meant red water. And then when the French came, they renamed it Vermilion, which meant brilliant red. So we called it Camp Arimony, and as we got into it, it turned in from Camp Arimony to Camp All My Money. And then towards the end of it, when we were striving to get through COVID and get the doors open for this huge wedding that we were going to have, it almost turned into Camp Alimony.
Yes, yes. Well, so describe it for us then. You know I've been there, but it's a series of these safari-style tents, the likes of which my words don't do justice. They're platformed cabin tent things. Tell us about the facility.
Okay, so down in the campground, we have 11 safari tents that were manufactured for us for Camp Arimony in South Africa. And they're different sizes, so they're anywhere from 420 square feet to 640 square feet. And they all have their own deck on a platform. Each tent has its own fire pit, and they're spaced a generous amount away from each other, so you have your privacy. And every night we come and we light your fire, and we make our own homemade s'mores on site in our kitchen, and we just tend to your every need. We have a restaurant on site that is specifically for the campers. So in your stay, it includes breakfast off a menu and dinner off a menu, and then there's a whole list of amenities that that we offer for the guests as well.
Yeah, well, I know you've got that Airstream trailer in the meadow by the river, and that's it serves coffee and cocktails at night. And so then the people check in, they go to their tent, they kibitz about, mill about. What do they do while they're there?
A lot of things. They can do in-suite massages. We have yoga on the deck on the river every Sunday morning. We have a pond that they can fish in. You can fly fish on the river. Right now, the Vermilion is more like a wading river than it is a swimming river. We do guided hikes. They can go pick wildflowers. In the evening, we do whiskey and chocolate flights, wine and cheese flights. And we do these beautiful picnics. We have 7 different picnic areas. So we and they're all themed. So we just did a picnic for 18 bridesmaids and their bride, and it was a boho style picnic, and it was just beautiful, and the girls just had an amazing time.
I guess people could do things off grounds too. They could go to Starved Rock. They could golf nearby. They could take a bike ride, right?
Yeah, we have bikes on the property that the guests are allowed to take, and we are so close to our amazing state parks, Matheson State Park, which now has acres and acres of blooming sunflowers. Yeah. It's just beautiful. Yeah. And Starved Rock State Park, they are only within 4 or 5 miles from camp. And then we're right in the middle of some really great small towns. Utica is a very quaint town that has lots of things to do, lots of great places to eat. We're only a few miles away from Ottawa, which you talk about often, and LaSalle, Peru. So we're right kind of in the middle of a perfect weekend getaway vacation spot.
Utica is kind of a little unsung hero of those four towns, LaSalle, Peru, Ottawa, Utica. Utica has got a couple of blocks on the main street there, and they kind of close them off, and there's a bunch of restaurants and bars and a wine bar and a great chicken place everybody knows called Scoog's and so forth. And people eat out, and it's just a very nice, kind of cool dining scene, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And they really, Utica, I give them all the credit in the world because they are really embracing the tourism in the Starved Rock country area. And, you know, with our guests, they like to, you know, sleep in late, come have their breakfast, yeah, and be casual in the morning. And then most of them leave camp for the afternoon, and they go out and they do things, and then they come back early. You know, it's always 5 o'clock at Camp Aramone, but the Airstream opens up at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they'll come in and have some cocktails and have a nice dinner, and then enjoy the dark skies and stargazing and their campfires.
Okay. By the way, one last thing. I noticed on your website that you had a picture of a long, long, long table, like you might see in a movie where all the glamorous or people are having this wonderful dinner in a field with tall grass and flowers or something. You must
right.
know the picture I'm talking about. What is that?
I do.
And how do I get to do that?
Okay, so we do have public events that we invite the public to. We do, on this coming Saturday, we have a Jimmy Buffett tribute night where we're having the acclaimed boat drunks come, and we're having a big Jimmy Buffett party. So we invite the public to come with us, come see us then. And then the following Saturday, the 27th, we have a, it's called Dinner in the Field, where we're serving a 5-course meal executed by our executive chef. And we're having some live jazz and light jazz and some folk art music right out there in the field, right by the pond and the river.
Mm. What's the date on that?
That's the 27th.
27th of July.
Okay. July. Mm-hmm.
Right around the corner.
And they can get tickets online for both events.
Okay. That's,
and also,
go ahead.
If you live close, we do have every Wednesday night, we have we're open to the public for what we call Wednesday Night Live, where it's very casual dining out on our big deck that overlooks the river, and we also always bring in a local artist to provide music for us.
Yeah, yeah, it's really nice what you do all there, and it's all really well done. Camp Aramone.
Thank you.
Camp Aramoni, CampAramoni.com for all of this. And a lot of the weekends are taken, but it's summertime, so maybe you can get away on a weekday as well. You can click through their calendar and see when you want to go and what they've got available. There's a bunch of different tents. Pick the one you like, pick the date, and enjoy Camp Aramoni. Okay. Nice.
Yeah, and we like to say, come as a stranger and leave as a friend, because you're going to be treated like kings and queens.
Jennifer Bias is the owner, CampAramoni.com. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, John.
All right, now let's continue with the business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Northwestern Memorial Hospital and Rush University Medical Center are among the top hospitals in the country. That's according to U.S. News and World Report's 2023-2024 Best Hospitals list. University of Chicago Medical Center is also high up in the rankings. Northwestern and Rush are listed on the honor roll of hospitals recognized for exceptional performance across specialties, procedures, and conditions. Northwestern ranked high in 20 procedures and conditions. Rush ranked high in 18. UChicago Medical Center ranked high in 16. U.S. News annually ranks hospitals in 15 specialties and 20 procedures and conditions. A new report says the cyber attack on CDK Global cost car dealerships an estimated $1 billion in sales. CDK is the Hoffman Estates company that provides data and technology services to the automotive industry. The cyber attack knocked systems offline back in June. Anderson Economic Group estimates dealerships lost more than 56,000 new vehicle sales between June 19th and July 6th. The $1 billion loss calculation factors in income from lost car sales, diminished service and parts revenue. CDK reportedly paid a $25 million ransom to end the cyber attack. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Now Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thanks. And let's begin with this. Have you ever wondered why food and good don't rhyme? The only difference is the beginning letter. I know, right? Anyway, this is not about that, but it is about food doing good.
This event is a fundraiser for a homeless shelter.
Who she is and how you can taste dozens of cakes, cookies, pies, and breads this Saturday in Uptown after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. You may recognize that as the theme song for the Great British Bake Off TV show.
Well, of course, I was binge-watching the Great British Baking Show years ago.
That is Genesis Winter.
And it just seemed like, you know, is there really nothing in Chicago like this?
There wasn't. And in 2018, she and a friend came up with the idea for Chicago's Best Baker competition.
We just thought it would be fun to have a lot of people get together. Just friendly competition.
So this Saturday morning,
the bakers drop off their items and then they leave. And we have judges who are bakers, professional bakers from different bakeries in Chicago.
And here's the best part. If you just like to eat pies, cakes, bread and cookies.
At 2 p.m., we open the doors for the regular public to come in. Once we announce the winners at 3, everybody who's donated can get a tasting pass. So that means that you can go around and taste everything that's been entered.
To be a taster, it's only $10 for a tasting pass per category, or $50 for an all-access pass. But even at $10, you have the opportunity to have a very satisfied sweet tooth.
Yeah, exactly. If you sign up for cakes, you're going to be tasting about 67 cakes.
So if you're a home baker and everyone raves about what you pull out of the oven.
We're still accepting entries until the 18th.
And perhaps best of all.
All proceeds from the event go to supporting the work of the shelter called Cornerstone Community Outreach.
Saturday, 2 o'clock.
At 935 West Wilson. Enter through everybody's coffee. There's a coffee shop in the front of the building. You just walk through the coffee shop.
For more information on how to enter or be a taster,
go to chicagosbestbaker.com.
On the food calendar, today's National Corn Fritters Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food and good, even though they don't rhyme, on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We just finished talking to Jennifer Bias, the owner of Camp Aramoni. 815 texted in to say, just wanted to say I went to Camp Aramoni Wednesday, July 3rd for music and dinner on the deck because of your commercials on WGN. We told our waitress we were from Rockford, Illinois, and we heard your commercial on the John Williams Show. Jennifer and Tim came to our table and chatted with us for a while and then gave us a tour of the campsite because of your commercial and us talking about it. So thank you for the ad that made us take the trip from Rockford Wednesday night. It was a great time. We hope to be able to go for the overnight stay in those awesome tents, says Julie and Jim, listening in Loves Park, Illinois. Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, that was that Wednesday thing she was talking about. It's all at CampAramoni.com to find out more.